Hi, welcome to day two of Microsoft Connect 2016. I'm Donovan Brown, Senior DevOps Program Manager at Microsoft. I'm going to be your moderator today for this session on DevOps. I'm going to allow everyone to introduce themselves, to let them know what team they're on and what they're working on. And then we're going to have a lively discussion on DevOps and how we here at Microsoft can implement it for any language targeting any platform. So make sure you get your questions ready. So why don't we start with Aaron?
Great. Thanks, Donovan. My name is Aaron Bjork. I'm a Group Program Manager here at the company. I work on the Visual Studio Team Services and Team Foundation Server product, and I look after all of our investments in work item tracking, agile project management, reporting, and dashboards.
Perfect. Mario?
Hi, my name is Mario Rodriguez. I'm also a Group Program Manager in TFS and VSTS, together with Aaron. I kind of serve a couple of different hats for some reason. I have a team that actually oversees the cloud platform where all the services are actually built on top of. So if you imagine the Agile, version control, RM and all of these services built on top of a cloud platform that we provide. I also oversee the package management team, and that's mainly one of the reasons why I'm here. And I also kind of talk a little bit with another person called Ramana, and him and I kind of share some of the marketplace investments that we have made.
Perfect. And last but not least, we have Application Insights.
Ketan Gilani, Program Manager on Application Insights team, and also a Program Manager on Kusto team that Brian talked about as a platform. So I also wear different hats. I work with a lot of large internal customers too, as well as very active with Application Insights. And I'm very excited to have GA this yesterday. We'll definitely talk about a little more about that as we go on.
Perfect. Well, this session is going to be about DevOps, and whenever I'm asked to define DevOps, I define it as the union of people, process, and products to enable the continuous delivery of value to our end users. And I'm so happy to have the guys who own the products with us here today. So we're going to be able to get some really nice insight of how we believe our products can actually enable that for you. When I go out to a lot of customers, I'm curious if you guys see as well, a lot of them still think of Visual Studio as just the Microsoft and the .NET team, right? All we can enable DevOps is for that. And I try to prove it every day that we can do it for any language. You guys want to speak to that on how we can actually do that?
Sure, yeah, I'll start. I think certainly with the areas of the product that I own, especially with the Agile project management, we really don't care what you're building. You're managing work and the lifecycle of that work from the beginning to the end. So we really feel like that platform, especially the platform in Visual Studio Team Service, is heterogeneous and ready for whatever application, regardless of the platform that you're building it for. So. And I think that sort of naturally sort of flows right into the source code and repositories and builds as well. We support all those different aspects, and it's definitely not just a Microsoft stack or a .NET stack.
I agree with you, because I tell everyone, it's source control. We could not care less what you're storing in the source
right.
control, so it's not a .NET specific
source control.
In fact,
sometimes you see people storing things in source control, and you're like, why are you putting that in source control? So we really don't care. We see
exactly.
it all.
Exactly, and I love the fact that we support both types of source control. So if you're into Git, we give you that to you. If you're into centralized, we give that to you too.
Yeah.
And now that our build system works both on Linux, Mac, and on PC, we can build it anywhere for you as well. So if you get nothing else out of our time together today, please make sure you realize that this works for any language targeting any platform. I've been saying it as often as I possibly can. I think the same is true for App Insights as well.
Very, very true. I think as Aaron said, we don't care about where your code is running, right? We basically can provide you insights, whether it's your app running in Java or whether it's running Node.js or whether it's running in .NET. I think you get same level of telemetry that you can collect from every kind of application that's running. And we have open sourced .SDK, so we are actually very encouraged by our community that has been contributing to some of the open source for the SDK also.
Yeah, Application Insights, I think, is such a critical part to actually delivering value. And I made that very specific in the definition because it wasn't about automating the movement of software. It wasn't about just copying files randomly to a server. It was about delivering value. And it's that custom telemetry that Application Insights allows you to collect that lets me know that the files that I just deployed there, they actually did deliver value. And I can see that 50% of our visitors got to that page and found some actual value in that page versus I'd put it there and maybe no one looked at it, right? Maybe no one's seeing that. And that Application Insights which allows me to do this not from a gut check or what I believe is happening, but actually see the numbers and say, no, you did or did not deliver value. So I'm a huge fan of that one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to add on to this, Steph, it's not only the custom telemetry, but also out-of-the-box telemetry
absolutely.
That Application Insights provides from a performance standpoint. You know, we called out kind of three specific things in terms of intelligent APM. Nowadays, people, you know, really, they want us to tell them how their application is performing versus them trying to diagnose what's happening. So that's one part of the intelligent APM. The other aspect is asking questions of their software, as you're talking about how many users were visiting that page, or on the other side, how many users were impacted by certain live site or something like that. So we have a platform of analytics to ask your ad hoc questions. And finally, of course, the integration with DevOps, you know, first-class integration with Visual Studio and GitHub and Team Foundation services.
Yeah, because that's what completes the circle for us, because it's about monitoring and learning from what we do. I mean, when we prioritize our product backlog, at day one, it's some guy's best guess at what he believes is the most important thing that we should be working on. And we expect him to be right, which is already unfair.
Yeah.
But the whole goal is that when we take that and we run an experiment, which is essentially writing the code that implements that feature and putting it into the hands of our users, it's application insights that tells us were we right or not. And what I like to know, I mean, what I really love about it is that if we're not, we can now use that information back in our product backlog and say, hey, maybe we need to adjust what we think is important because clearly that didn't hit the mark. And I also like the fact that it's not always because it wasn't a good idea. Maybe it's not intuitive. Maybe the marketing wasn't pushed behind it. And we can go run additional experiments and put marketing behind it and see if the numbers change. But using real numbers is so powerful to make sure that you're delivering value and not just automating your deployment.
Yeah, we often talk about that. And internally, we do as well with our own products. But we talk about it as planning and learning. And you know, you're kind of continually planning because your backlogs are always changing. You're continually learning because you're writing code. You're deploying that code, and then you're watching the telemetry and the insights that come out of that. And those two things put together are sort of what sort of feed the backlog and really help you land in a better place in the end.
So. I agreed. So we actually have our first question, and one of them is, this is one that we've been getting since the beginning of TFS, is now that we've released Visual Studio 2017, will it be able to connect and work with TFS 2015 that they have installed?
I'll take it. So yes, you know, Visual Studio 2017 will be able to connect to TFS 2015. Would also be able to connect, you know, down to 2013 as well, and of course 2017 as well. We try to do a pretty good job in making sure that the window that Team Explorer, for example, can connect to a TFS environment is a very long window, because we know that a set of our customers sometimes, you know, they take a little bit to actually upgrade their clients, or not even that, you know, there are solutions that you have to actually open with all their clients of Visual Studio as well. So we try to do, you know, our best to actually make sure that Team Explorer is backwards compatible as much as we can. You know, and you could probably find in our documentation what is the latest release on that, but yes, 2017 to 2015, perfectly fine. Same thing with 2013 as well.
You are perfect, and I see that a lot. People are like, so why should I go to Visual Studio Team Services? Because like, you get all the updates immediately for free. Right? You don't have to stop and upgrade it yourself. And
yes.
I know a lot of our customers, for whatever reason, do take a while to upgrade their on-prem TFS because it's large and they're frightened, even though the upgrades are always done pretty well. So yeah, it's great to know that you can get to the latest tooling from an IDE perspective and still be able to use our OTFS as well. So that's fantastic. So will VSTS support trigger builds on other builds and conditional build steps at any time soon? So I'm going to kind of paraphrase that. It sounds like they're asking, will we be able to trigger builds off of different repositories is how I'm kind of interpreting that. And we can already do that out of GitHub. So if you were to commit to GitHub today, we can actually have our build actually go ahead and trigger a build automatically on that. So we are already working in places like that. A lot of our framework is extensible as well. So I always joke when people say, well, can you guys do this? I'm like, don't wait for us to do it. Right? A lot of it's open source. We have a great, like for example, the marketplace we're going to talk about a little later is a great place for the full of extensions that have been written by people who simply don't want to wait for us. Right? And there's like, we can just go do this ourselves today. And it's a fantastic place for you to go find a lot of value. And when we were talking about this session, and I brought up that I wanted someone from the marketplace in this session, I thought, that's kind of weird to have a marketplace guy in a DevOps discussion. And I was able to easily defend that and said, no, it's not, because Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Team Services is so easy to extend that a lot of our customers and all of our partners have already extended it and added a lot of value to what potentially will be your DevOps pipeline. So having someone representing a marketplace here, I thought was very applicable for
correct.
This discussion.
We actually, you know, nowadays pride ourselves on our extensibility platform, on our extensibility. We've done a lot of work actually in that and making sure we have a robust set of REST APIs. We have pretty good documentation nowadays over there. And also we have a pretty kind of unique accessibility, what we call contribution points, an accessibility platform. And the other big thing is, you know, you as an extension provider, you could just write it once and it will work both on Team Foundation services and also worked on premises as well. So you don't have to be in this mode where you're writing all of your code in one place and then trying to actually write another extension for on premises as well. So I think, you know, we have a pretty good story. We actually launched Marketplace at last year's Connect. That's the first time we went public with it. And since then, we have had great success on it. I think Brian yesterday actually published a set of like what we call vanity metrics or great numbers to talk about with 12.3 million unique users, with 299, you know, between, we probably got our 300 plus right now extensions. And things like that. In fact, let me just walk really quick over there just to give you a small peek about what the marketplace is, just in case people have never seen it. So like that you could see, you know, kind of filter through it, and then we'll just focus on the build.
Great, so while you're going over to set up for your demo here, we're gonna tackle one of these other questions, and I'm gonna let Aaron handle this one, which is basically, when can we expect to have customization, like work item customization. Now, we already have some of that, so why don't you talk to the extent of what we already have and what we're what may be coming?
Yeah, so the question is, you know, when can we have work item customization in VSTS? And you have a bunch of that now. So essentially, it was about a year ago as well, like Mario was talking about, that we announced that we had process customization on Visual Studio Team Services. The reality is it's not quite the same process customization that we have for TFS.
Correct.
And that was very intentional. We did it because essentially, we wanted to provide a richer experience there with more capability. And we also really wanted to lower the barrier to entry and sort of the complexity of that. So what that means is that that process customization for VSTS is still ongoing. You know, we've added the custom types that you can have. We're about to add custom backlog levels. You've obviously got custom fields, all those types of things. What's coming next are some additional capabilities. I think the question had a little bit about like conditional rules and things like that. So all of that is coming, and I think you'll continue to hear us talk about that early in calendar year 17 coming up.
So I think you mentioned like state transitions and taking control of those.
Yeah, you can actually customize states on VSTS today. So that's all there. If you haven't gone and looked at it in a while, go check it out, because one of the things we struggle with is with updating our service every 3 weeks.
Awareness.
It's actually the awareness of it. Even for us, sometimes it's hard to, oh my gosh, yeah, that is there, and I keep forgetting to tell people about it.
So. I my most popular tweet ever was when I said, we give you unlimited private repos, which you should already know, right? And it just was like 300 retweets, 300 faves, like, but you should already know this. How do you not know this, right? So yeah, the awareness is something that we have to do a lot better job of it. And again, I tell people the same thing. We're moving so fast that I don't even keep up with what we are able to do.
And let me bring that question too. We were talking about process customization and work item customization. As we relate it back to the marketplace, which Mario here is going to show you in a second, one of the real nice things about the extensibility points is that they're everywhere. Like we've got the extensibility points for your builds, right? And you can add custom build tasks and deployment tasks. We've got them for widgets on our dashboards. You can write custom widgets there. We've actually got them on the work items as well. So we've got a bunch of partners that are adding sort of rich functionality into their work items and then putting them in the marketplace for other people to use as well. We've recently shipped a set of sort of samples. We kind of keep them in sort of our dev labs, you know, brand, you know, toggle controls and little color buttons and things like that. But it's a great way to extend the product and take it a little bit further, especially in some really custom and tailored ways. If you don't want to wait for us to catch up and do all that, because you know there's a lot of breadth there, and we can't always address every customer's needs directly out of the box.
Agreed. So Mario, are you ready to show us some cool stuff?
Definitely.
All right, great. So switch over to Mario, please. Perfect.
Okay, perfect. So if you can see my screen right now, what I am is at marketplace.visualstudio.com, and you can see we have a set of product pivots over here. There's Visual Studio, and those are all of your IDE extensions. Visual Studio Team Services, and that serves both for on-premises, TFS, and also the cloud product. Visual Studio Code, and all of the, all of the extensions that they actually support. So if we go back to Visual Studio Team Services really really quickly, what you see over here is, you know, you can quickly search, but you also get a set of features, most popular and recently added. And we do this so like that our customers can kind of find things that are trending, that have been new, and we don't, you're not always installing things that, you know, was very hot, let's say, a year ago. You could actually start thinking a little bit more about okay, what come in every month and try to say, okay, what value can I get out of some of these extensions? Even the feature, we actually rotate a set of them every 3 weeks, sometimes every week as well. So build and release is really, you know, kind of like the meat of the extensions that we have. So if we actually go there really quick and look at Seymour, you're going to see that we have around 181 extensions. Out of the 300 or so that we have, 181 of them are actually on the DevOps pipeline, right? Which is great. This is clearly an area where it's really, really hot, and there's a lot of people contributing from a community perspective and even Microsoft. Let me just ignore that.
Mario, you got to join your daily stand-up.
I know.
You see, we're agile. So, for example, if I'm looking for something like Docker, as you guys know, we actually refreshed this this build task yesterday. We announced a refresh of it. I could click on it. I could get more details about what the extension is, look at the reviews, the installs. And I just one click, I could say install. That would actually get me over here. I could pick one of this. That's one of the accounts. Click continue. I'm just trying to show you how easy it is actually to install one of these things into your Visual Studio Team Services account. It's installing.
I noticed that there's a download button there too. And
yes.
I believe that's so that we can take this exact same extension and install it on-prem as well.
Yes,
correct?
Although we have, that is true. Specifically for TFS 2015, update 2 and above, I believe, correct, is when we added the ability to take something from Marketplace and then seamlessly install. The great news is in 2017, you could actually just from 2017, from TFS 2017, say, I want to install an extension from Marketplace, and it seamlessly downloads it and installs it.
That's
so
perfect.
You don't actually have to download anymore. For the older TFS servers, you will have to do that. For a 2017 server, you actually just have the same installation experience, more or less, that we went through for Team Foundation Services. So it's already installed. I could proceed to the account really quick. And over here, if we go to one of my, and this is a personal account, but so if we go to one of these and actually see one of the build and release, you're going to be able to actually see it in here. So if we go to one of the build definitions and say new, you know, let's say we want to build something for Xamarin Android really quick. From master hosted, and we say create. And one of the great things on it is over here in my build step, I could say add. And in the task catalog, I should now see the Docker once installed right there. So just a quick, simple install, really less than a minute to do that. And then you have it in your local catalog, and now you could use it. So
Thank you so much. Just wanted to show
you that really quick, because from a DevOps perspective, all of these build tasks and release management tasks are going to make your life incredibly easier, and it will be really powerful for that end-to-end.
Thank you so much,
Thanks.
Mario. Like I said, I'm a big fan of our Marketplace. I actually have my own extension in the Marketplace, right? So I've actually contributed there as well, and it's a fantastic place to go and get a lot of value that you can add to your pipeline. Now, one of the other questions that we have coming up here is, are we going to be including DevOps pipeline itself inside of Visual Studio? So we did a little bit of that with the Docker tooling, right? So if you saw the keynote yesterday, I made a joke that I was just right-clicking on everything, and every time I did, I was finding more powerful things that we could do by creating an entire CI/CD pipeline for you inside of Team Services, but they were specific for Docker at that point. We're obviously going to try to continue to reduce the friction when it comes to taking your code and deploying it for you inside of Visual Studio Team Services. So I definitely we're going to keep investing there. Right now we have the Docker support. It literally creates an entire CI and CD pipeline for you automatically from that tool
Yeah,
set.
And you know what I would add to that as well is we're also trying to invest very heavily on integration with Azure. So you could actually just go to Azure and specifically within the portal say, hey, I want to actually build this this type of application, and let me hook it up with Team Services. Let me actually hook up a build definition, a release definition on it, and have that end-to-end very seamlessly in it. And that would allow you to, instead of Visual Studio and everything we're doing there will be great, because as a developer, that's where I start. But also from the other side, you also want to do the exact same thing. If I'm a developer in Azure, if I'm an ops person as well in Azure,
absolutely,
I just want to be able to go and say, right click, let me actually hook up the pipeline back into Team Services And just have it done. And actually, even from Azure, you could hook it up with different service providers as well. It doesn't have to be only team services. So I think we're going to get an amazing story from both ends, from the developer, I mean, an IDE. Mm-hmm. And actually, I want to start actually playing with all of these things. And then we're going to get another great story from the whole perspective of I'm an ops, or I actually live within the Azure portal a lot, and I want to hook up everything in a very seamless fashion.
Exactly. And even
just
in
one more thing to add, actually, as you were talking about ops person or even developers going to the Azure portal, the integration we also have from the Azure portal for application insights to also with where you can actually create work items for the different issues mm-hmm. that you might be seeing. Mm-hmm. So really from a DevOps lifecycle, you can actually start looking at, hey, whether you're in Azure portal or whether in VS, actually, you can still have the richness of kind of the DevOps scenario there.
And that's really nice because you're highlighting one of the reasons why I think choosing as few vendors as you possibly can to build your pipeline is a good thing, right? In the past, it used to be, oh, I don't want to have vendor lock-in. I don't want to be locked to a vendor, and when something new and cool comes out, I got to wait for them to go back and implement it. But one of the advantages that you get is the traceability that is just unparalleled. The fact that I can go from the portal directly back into Visual Studio into Team Services. But we've kind of changed our perspective here at Microsoft to where Team Services is trying to give you the best of both worlds, mm-hmm. which is where if you really wanted to deploy to someone else's cloud, you could, right? If you really wanted to use someone else's build system, you could. But you could still use the rest of what we offer. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, the extensibility points that we have allow you to have REST APIs in and out. We have you web hooks in both directions
services,
so that you can actually build a tool chain however you want, but trust me, the fewer vendors you have in your tool chain, the better, because there's a cost of ownership which people start to ignore, right? The true cost of ownership is not what you paid for the tool that you're using. It's what you continue to pay to integrate that tool with everything else in your pipeline, right? You pay that cost over and over and over again. And when you use Microsoft, like I did yesterday at the keynote, there was no integration cost, right? I paid no tax for doing everything from Visual Studio to Team Services into Azure, because all of it just does it out of the box. So I love the integration story that we have, and I love the fact that it's still piecemeal, though. It literally is the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. If you want to use everything that we have, we will do it for you out of the box with zero friction. If you insist on replacing one of those pieces, we're going to help you as much as we can there as well. So let's get back to another one of the questions there. One of them was about upgrading, right? How do I migrate from the TFS that I have on-prem into VSTS? And we have some minimum requirements for that, and I was hoping that, Aaron, you could talk to that for us.
I'll take it.
Oh, you'll say that? Yeah,
sure. I'll take it because I own that feature. That feature is what we call data import. Remember, one of my hats is kind of like the framework stuff.
That's right.
So I actually do a feature to enable the work items that are on premises to come to the cloud and make Iron successful on that end. But we announced yesterday an actual TFS migrator or TFS data import service, I think is what we call it. I forgot now the exact name. What we ended up doing is giving you a solution. We could use seamless take a database from on-premise, and usually a database is a collection on-premise for those that kind of know those technical terms. You take one of those databases on-premise and then go through a validation, prepare, and then an import phase, and all of a sudden you get a VSTS account with all of your data. Super high fidelity. We try to bring in as much as we can. There's almost no data loss. There's a couple of things that don't have to bring in, like the jobs that the person has configured and things like that. But from a data perspective, extremely high fidelity. And I think what the question is saying, one of the things that we are requiring people to do is actually update to, update 3, and also to, or you could use TFS 2017 as well. And the reason why we do that is because of the high fidelity part, is we need to get the actual data in a shape that we could guarantee that high fidelity. We sat down probably with hundreds of customers before we started investing in this, and the normal one feature they wanted was, please let me get my data into the cloud with high fidelity, right? And that's what we're trying to optimize for. So by all actually having you update your server, then we could actually do that and do it very, very, very well. In addition, updating the server, before when I joined the team back in 2005, updating or installing the server was a full-time consultant job.
That was my job before I joined Microsoft.
Exactly, it was great. I actually went to many customers to install our product. But nowadays it's seamless. Yeah, it's the reality of it. You kind of double click. There's some big enterprises that is a little bit more complicated for them because they have, you know, several application tiers and data tiers and things like that. But if you're kind of a normal customer, it's a very seamless process. So it's usually not a high tax. And we have great set of partners, by the way. We did a partner bootcamp very recently over here where we prepared them to be able to go to all of these places and be able to allow, you know, those people that have complicated upgrade cycles to do it. So, and even it could be free too for a set of these customers. So for example, you could just pick up the TFS Express and just install it in a box, detach from where you are and attach to that, and that would automatically update to the latest version. So you don't even have to actually pay new license or anything like that if you want to accomplish this as part of moving to the cloud. So, and then for those people that get TFS for free, they just have to update. But yes, it's one of those things that it's not ideal, but if you think about from a high fidelity perspective, we want to make sure that we could actually have that promise out to our customers. So that's why we do that.
Great. So they upgrade to TFS 2015 Update 3, I believe is what you were saying.
Yes, I believe we just changed it to Update 3.
And then from there, I can jump straight from there into the VSTS.
Yeah, or you can use TFS 2017 as well.
Okay. All right, perfect. So hopefully that answered the question for you as well. So do Chef or Puppet have place in your DevOps process? Oh, that's a good question.
Always, I said.
Yeah. We allow you to use whatever tools that you already are invested in, and I think that's really important. So gone are the days where I can come in and say, you're using Jenkins, you should get rid of Jenkins and use our build system instead, because you've already invested years in that product, and it has a very integral part inside of what you do from a DevOps perspective. That could be true for Chef, it could also be true for Puppet. So as we've been saying again, extensibility is a really key fundamental practice or mantra that we live at here at Microsoft, so that you can actually use the tools that you're already using today if you're already using those tools. Now, do they have a place? It depends on what it is that you're trying to do. Because if you're just trying to do PaaS and Azure, you can do all that without them. So again, this goes to, do I want to just build my DevOps pipeline with as many vendors as I possibly can, or do I really want to build one that solves my problem? I have a lot of customers say, well, we want to do best of breed, right? I'm like, okay, great. What makes that one better than that one? Well, does this better? Like, okay, do you use that? Well, no, but we want best of breed. I'm like, so that's we were talking about vanity earlier, right? You're literally complicating your DevOps pipeline for vanity alone, because we heard that that was the best one, so our pipeline must have the best one. So what I would do is, does Chef and Puppet have a place in your DevOps process? That is a question only you can answer. We don't know what you're doing. Every DevOps pipeline is different. So we need to know what it is that you're trying to do, and is it require Chef or Puppet to do that? I put Chef and Puppet in the same category as desired state configuration in my mind, right? Yeah. It's really about configuration infrastructure as code. And we have products that do that for you, right? We have ARM templates that can do infrastructure. We have DSC that can do configuration. So again, it depends on what you're doing. If those don't fit your needs, then maybe you need to go invest in a Chef or Puppet.
And I think that's another place where too, I think the real question is, can I have Chef or Puppet in my DevOps pipeline?
Answer is absolutely yes.
Absolutely yes.
Absolutely
and,
yes.
And we're not going to stop you. You know,
absolutely.
3 or 4 years ago, our answer might have been different, right? Yeah, I think today our answer is absolutely, and it's really it's up to you to decide.
It is. Yeah. I can't answer that question for you. But again, just evaluate what it is that you're trying to do. Another thing that's interesting that I find when people talk about Puppet and Chef and they dismiss DSC is they don't realize that DSC works on Linux, right? They immediately assume that it only works on Windows, and DSC has worked on Linux actually longer than PowerShell has been open sourced for Linux, right? So again, it's that awareness thing that we're having trouble with, because I go and I say that to people and they get this weird look on their face like, what? Like, yeah, DSC works on Linux. So do I need Puppet or Chef? It all depends on what it is that you're doing. But sure. I love your point that yes, you can use it if you want to.
I also want to add, I actually have had a couple of meetings with the Chef team to try to see from an accessibility and marketplace perspective, is there value in there where they could have deeper integration into our DevOps pipeline for those customers that really use a significant amount of the of Chef products.
Yep.
And Chef just released recently Habitat, for example, which is something completely new. And there's a set of people that are actually going to go in and utilize that value. So how can we and our end system and all of those things integrate great with what they're doing and the innovation that they're trying to bring into the space? So what I would say is, we're actually partnering with them in many places, within Azure.
Yep.
And I had a couple of meetings already with them. And we're looking at opportunities for better integration into VSTS. So for those people that utilize it, you know, it's kind of point and click as well, and they don't have to go through a lot of configuration. So we're very open nowadays.
Absolutely.
So the answer to all of the questions that you have, can we integrate partner X, will always be yes. It's just, you know, is partner X also going to go in and do some work to be able to make that seamless for that customer?
Absolutely. So if I'm not mistaken, we GA'd.
I just broke the table, by the way.
But I think we GA'd App Insights yesterday. Is that correct?
Yes, actually, we did. We actually were excited about the GA. We talked a little bit about in the keynote, as well as you know, some of the things that Brian demoed today. A couple of things that I want to point out about the GA is really around one is really the customers were asking about, hey, can we have more data, the time for the more data in them, since earlier we limited our raw data to 97 days. Now we actually have 90 days of raw data. That's amazing, actually. You can do all kinds of stuff for your telemetry from that perspective. The other aspect that we also had is we also simplified the pricing model. And when you look at from a perspective of, you know, people, we were, again, this is feedback from the customers, talking to thousands of customers that were already using Application Insights. You know, data points, different tiers were a little confusing, so we kind of simplified down to like a basic and an enterprise, and then it's kind of a pay-as-you-go model. They have a certain amount free that they can use, which is great for your, you know, development, pre-prod, and test apps, and then you have production apps, you start paying as you want to guarantee the SLA there. So definitely very simplified pricing model, as you can check out. The other new features that we released, actually, I'll try and show you briefly right now, is basically the live failures. The live failures that we have, so basically you can actually have live stream of metrics that are coming in, as well as you can actually look at what's happening on your site right now, what failures are happening on the site right now. That's part of their application map that we released. Also, it's there. And the smart APM aspect is there. So I'll show you some of the features right now, actually.
All right, cool. So while you work over there, we'll answer some more of the questions. One of the questions was, can we move the history of work items with the REST API, right?
So yeah, and the answer is you could. Yeah, absolutely. I think the REST APIs are there, and if you want to use them, you know, they're there for you to use. I think, you know, I would probably recommend if you're gonna move things with the REST APIs, like doing sort of a tip migration is probably the easiest. When you're rewriting history, it's a little more difficult. And like Mario pointed out, using the import is a great way to get that really high fidelity, so
Correct.
No data loss. We also have partners that have invested in this space as well that do allow us to move things around as well. So,
all right, perfect. Yeah, I'm actually a big fan of the REST API. I played with it when I generated a Yeoman generator. Like you were saying, you can just type YoVSTS and it'll build an entire DevOps pipeline for you, right? Because I wanted to make sure that if you're not inside Visual Studio, you still have the same power that we have inside Visual Studio. So I wanted any language, any platform, and YoVSTS is open source. You can actually go contribute. I think I got my first pull request today.
Awesome.
Some guy went and updated the ARM template so that it'll add some more app settings for us in our deployment.
Go.
So it's really cool. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, the REST API is extremely, extremely powerful, and we can do some really cool things. Now, one of the other questions was, can you please explain the hosted build servers? Do you always get a new and clean machine before each build? You do.
You do, yeah.
Yeah, you get a brand new machine. So anything, don't expect anything to be there when you run your build the next time, right? You basically need to assume that everything's going to be clean, and your task need to set up whatever it is that you need to set up, do your build, and then assume that it's not going to be there when you come back. Now, I've been working on this blog post for a while. A lot of people are like, oh, why doesn't your hosted agent have this yet? Why doesn't your hosted agent have that yet? And then I keep saying, well, why don't you just stand up your own private agent? Oh, I don't want to do that. I'm like, you act like that's a bad thing. The fact that we allow you to do that is like a really awesome thing, that we allow you to stand up your own private agent. The queue time is zero, right? It's your agent sitting there doing nothing but waiting for you. It can have whatever prerequisites you want installed on it. So there are tools we probably will never put on our hosted build agents, right? So don't, that just doesn't make sense for us. So I find having my own private build agents to be an amazing advantage, not a disadvantage, when I'm using our system. So yes, you get a brand new clean build system, and take that for what it's worth, but don't be afraid to stand up your own build server.
Yeah. And I'll second that. I see a lot of enterprise customers that are actually moving to the cloud. but they want to keep their build infrastructure at times on premises because of security reasons or things like that. And they all stand private build agents and kind of put whatever they need to do there. They could even run their tests that actually hit their local network.
Absolutely.
That's usually why we see it the most, to tell you the truth. So they stand them up, and it's great, and it works great, and we think it's something that people should do. But for another set of people, our hosted build agents actually work extremely well.
I agree.
And it's just really where you are and what you're trying to achieve.
Absolutely. But to answer the question, yes, you get a brand new machine every single time. Are you ready to show us some cool stuff over there, or you need a couple more minutes?
I need a minute or two.
No matter, another minute or two. Okay. Do we have plans to have work item search?
We do. Yeah, we do. Yeah.
All right.
So the question is, you know, we have a work item search across all projects, just like code search. The answer is we do. We just announced a public preview of it yesterday.
Absolutely. So there, Sachin, there you go.
Go play with it. Go up to the top, type in your search, and you'll land in our brand new work item search preview, which is super powerful, very cool. All the filtering down the left, directly. Yeah. Integrated. So yeah, it's there for you.
Perfect.
Yeah,
so for, you know, if we want to tie in into this, into DevOps, you know, I always say search is critical, and we actually use it a lot internally. So for example, let's say you have a live side incident happening right now in the service or something like that. As the developer is actually debugging, maybe he sees a call stack or anything like that, he wants to quickly find, okay, a line of code that actually matches that or that method or whatever. So he goes into code search and actually goes ahead and does the query, finds out where the actual change happened. And because of our traceability, you could even go ahead and say, okay, what was the commit and what was the work item that actually made that commit? So you could even go all the way back. And I could even do a work item search and even find the commit that created, you know, some change that recently happened in this sprint. And that's why, you know, there's something in production going wrong. So search is one of those tools that is critical when it comes to actually the efficiency that you get when doing DevOps.
Gotcha.
I think too, like building on that, one of the things we're excited about having it in public preview now is that we've been using it internally for a while, but now that it's out there externally, we're going to get a lot of feedback on it, and it's going to really help us with relevance and making sure that you're finding things very, very quickly. So it's exciting to have it out there.
I completely agree. So there's last question here. Is there a way to optimize NPM restore times? Now, I don't know if this is specifically a question about our package management or a generic question saying, I have a lot, because it sounds like they have a build where the majority of their time is basically updating their NuGet packages,
correct,
right? And I want you to see if there's something that they can do specifically. I know, first of all, if you use a private build agent, I don't think you have to renew those. You can actually cache a lot of that information locally that won't get thrown away when you do your next build. But what else could we do for them?
Yeah, so, I mean, if you do have a significant amount of packages and they are of different amount of sizes, let's say you're actually downloading 50 gigabytes or something like that, you know, today the NPM client doesn't make it easy for us to go in there and try to do differential kind of pool or anything like that. Really what they have done is allow you to cache stuff locally. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to do the local cache as much as you possibly can. So what I would say is if you're trying to make things fast, you have to use the local cache as much as you can. So a private build agent might be the solution for you there. You know, other than that, on premises, we are trying to actually explore caching behavior, you know, caches within your actual TFS repository to be able to speed up things. So you don't always have to go to NPM to retrieve a package. You could go through us. And because we have cached it already, we just give it back to you. So there's things on premises that we could do to do things like that are better. But in the cloud, you are going to have to go either with a private agent. Now, in this case, you know, they're saying about bill minutes. You know, we're trying to make a change to go to for you to pay on concurrency and build pipelines and RM pipelines. So that would actually make it better from a cost perspective for this customer. But I think caching is really the solution. Proxying and caching are the solution for this.
Great.
So,
and our next question is basically going right back to the why I would use a private agent. So it says, the cost of a custom build agents for small businesses is too high. Hosted should have .NET 4.6.2. So you get a private build agent for free, right? So you do not have to pay any additional amount. You can run as many builds on that private agent as you want. They can last as long as you want, and there is no additional cost. So to avoid the hosted minutes cost that you're having to pay for this. Just stand up a private build agent absolutely for free, put 4.6.2 on that machine, and then go do your builds, and they can take as long as you want. So again, I hope we can convince people that a private build agent is not a bad thing. It is not a punishment. It's actually a benefit that we allow you to go and stand these up, register them with your VSTS, and build all your applications on your own private agent. So hopefully that'll help address that one as well. Now, you think we're ready to go?
Yes, we're ready to go.
All right, perfect. So we're going to go ahead and switch over to our demo. Take it away.
Okay, let's go. Thank you again. So I'm excited to show some of the good features, great features actually we released in Application Insights with the general availability. A couple of things I just do want to highlight that you know I wanted to also say. For all our European customers, actually, we actually have now an Application Insights that they can actually have an instance in Europe. So that's also generally available for our Europe customers. So this is kind of shows you the dashboard that people can use. And in this dashboard, you can get all rich data, not only from Application Insights, but all your other Azure properties too. So I think it gives you kind of an overview from a DevOps perspective. You know, all the things that you care about for your application, for your services, for your infrastructure services, and for your app telemetry and performance. So you can see all that pretty rich information here. Coming back to what we released, some of the new features that I'm excited to show you about is, one of the is basically things we call as live failures or live streams. Some of them may be already using live streams, but we also added something called live failure. So as you can see here, this is actually an application that is being monitored, and you can see the metrics are coming in. And just to let you know that it's live, this is the application that it's monitoring. I'm going to click a couple times here, and I can see, and you'll see generate some exception. As you can see, the exception just came in right here and there. And not only that, actually you can look at that exception, but you can also look at the details of that exception. And this is really critical when you're actually deploying stuff and you're kind of monitoring your application. So this kind of shows you in the live stream that's there, the live failures that are there. The other aspect actually, not only from a developer standpoint, which I really like, is when they are actually developing the application, you're familiar with the CodeLens feature, they can see right then and there. You know, developers are always proud, you know, why does my application or why does my method is generating this exception? And if they can see that, this method generated two exceptions in the last 24 hours, they would go and fix that, right? So that's what developers would be excited about. They can see the trends of the exception that method has been happening in the application. They can explore the application trend right then and there in Visual Studio. They can look at the requests that are being generated for their application, the trends of the number of failed requests that have been generated for the application. So you can see all of that information right then and there. For example, here it says, you know, this method has been performing pretty reliably in this case. The number of requests have not failed in there. So you can see all that information, rich information, right in Visual Studio. The other aspect I want to talk about is a little bit about the, let's go into here, which is about the maps. So let's go here. So when this is one of the applications that we have that use to monitor ourselves, as you can see, one of the things that we also have, this one is automatically detected by the Application Insights. So I didn't have to do any coding to detect the kind of the topology of my application. So you can see that the availability from an outside-in perspective, then you have the client side and the server side, and all the dependencies that the server is calling or the client is calling, in this case the AJAX calls, and from a dependency side on the server side, as you can see, some of the Azure table storage, sometimes it'll be SQL, depending on the different aspects that you can there. And you can see the failures that are there in the dependencies. You click right then and there and get to these failures and get to the troubleshooting cause right in there. And then you see other button, like this is called analytics. And this is the analytics, kind of the platform based on, this is the analytics capability based on Kusto platform that Brian Harry demoed. As you can see in this case, I'm going over 90 days of data. As you can see here, it's about 1.7 billion records in here, right? And I can very quickly ask questions about my application. For example, in this case, I don't even know whether people have appropriate telemetry for generating the SLA. And in this case, I can actually go ahead and say, right then and there, I can actually create a query which says, hey, am I actually meeting my SLA or not? In this case, I'm looking at a duration less than 3,000, then I'm not meeting my SLA, otherwise I'm meeting my SLA. And you can see that I can right then and there do the query in there. The other richness we are adding, as you'll see, this is kind of the Easter egg as it comes along, is one of the things that we're trying to do is integrate machine learning algorithms. As we saw, some of the things as I was going to show you, I did close my mail because Donovan said, make sure your mail is closed. So I wanted to show you, okay, where is this word? I copied the mail that I got for application from Application Insights. There are two types of proactive detection that we do. One is called a near real-time detection. Actually, it looks at, you didn't have to configure anything for your application. It just configures for you to say, hey, if we see some anomalies that are happening in near real time, it'll actually email you. And then it also looks at on a daily basis to see if there's anomalies happening. So this is kind of the proactive detection technology that we have behind Application Insights. And then we also wanted to not only do this, but also wanted to kind of expose this, democratize this to our users to say, hey, we are using this, why can't you also use it? So one of the things we are trying to do here is actually, let's look at one of the things here. A query here which shows you, let's say, a time chart. A query that shows you kind of the performance that was happening or the issue that was happening during a certain time period. And you'll see that in this case is where the time period was, basically we had the duration increase during this time period. And we also wanted to see, so if you kind of zoom in during that time period, you will see that the duration has increased definitely from what it was. And then we are, and this is actually not there yet, so this is an Easter egg, but it'll be there soon. It shows you the anomalies that are there, and then actually basically you can click to diagnose to figure out what was happening during that time period. It analyzes all your data, tells you the queries that it's running, and then actually shows you what could be possibly that a starting point for your diagnosis as there. So that's pretty cool, actually, that's coming soon from analytics standpoint or smart detection standpoint. In this case, as you can see, it came back and say, you know, this most likely, this version was the problem of what you deployed. So it's very, very cool technology that's coming on board with Application Insights. So that kind of summarizes what I wanted to show.
Perfect. That's a great overview of all the new great stuff that we have from Application Insights. And like I said, that's a critical part to make sure you're actually delivering value and not just copying files around. Now, I want to go back to one of the questions. It sounds like we didn't quite answer the question about the hosted build agents. And there was a specific question about being able to trigger one build from another. And I love the fact that we started off with extensions because we're going to go back there really quick. There actually is an extension called the Tracheon extension that actually has a task that will allow you to trigger whatever build you want after the completion of your current build. I also know that it is a top of mind for everyone on our team. And I believe that it's on our backlog. It's going to be coming to where it'll be natively supported. But I wasn't willing to wait, so I literally wrote a task that will trigger whatever build I want inside of Team Services. So you don't have to wait to do that. You can install a Tracheon extension and go do that today. Another one is about, so this was a little interesting because I was kind of talking off air on one of these questions. Is how much continuous integration tools do we have inside of VSTS and TFS? Well, CI has been a fundamental part of Team Foundation Server from its inception. As soon as you check in code, we are able to trigger whatever build you'd like us to trigger. That works today as well. We can also do scheduled builds. So if you're a team that likes to do nightly builds as well, you can schedule those same things. And one of the nice things in 2015 was you didn't have to have two builds to do nightly in CI, which we used to have to do before. If you haven't seen our build system since 2013, you need to take another look. It is drastically different. I always joke and apologize for our old build systems because when you see the new one, you're like, this is what we should have written the first time, and we agree. It is fantastic. It'll build on any language, so it'll build on any platform, so on Mac, PC, or Linux. We can trigger from more than just our own repository, so you can get full continuous integration. It's tightly integrated with our release management system, so you can get complete CI and CD pipelines built. And because we have the ability for you to listen to our webhooks that we're sending out, you can actually have other systems trigger off of our completion of our builds as well. So,
and it's an extensibility point, right? So
absolutely.
You can contribute whatever you need.
There. Absolutely. Yeah. It's the same way that I contributed the trigger other build, because I had one where I needed to build a mobile app on a Mac, and once that mobile app was done, I needed to go build the back end on a Windows machine. Yeah. And I needed those to be orchestrated, so I wrote a task that I was able to put in one build that then triggered the release in another build. So absolutely, it's a fantastic extension point. Yeah. It was the first one that I played with, actually. Yeah. So some of the other things that I saw mentioned even before Connect was this Teams. And I believe that Teams actually integrates inside of Teams services or vice versa. Can you talk to that, Aaron?
Yeah. So Microsoft Teams was just announced a couple weeks ago, I believe. Mm-hmm. Brand new product from Microsoft. I'm not going to try to explain it all, but it's a chat collaboration a tool. It's fantastic. Go check it out. One of the really cool things about Teams is that we've integrated with it in two ways. The first way is that we integrate through what we call office connectors.
Okay.
And essentially, we've got hooks on our end that when certain events happen inside Visual Studio Teams services, we can write events directly back to your Teams channel, and they show up directly in there. So that includes build events, it includes work item events, code events, release events, they're all there.
Got it.
And so you get that sort of rich traceability right in your channels. We're also going to be working with the Teams team on, don't get me started, but we're going to be working with those guys on making those more interactive. They have plans for that, and we're sort of aligned with that as well.
Okay.
The other really cool integration is that they have what we call a tabs integration. So right next to your channel inside Teams, you get these tabs, and we've taken the step to directly integrate our Kanban board into that. So you can have your chat channel on one side and your Kanban board right on the other, and sort of be able to talk very richly with both surfaces right there.
So, awesome. On Visual Studio Toolbox, Sandra came and actually demoed that for us. And we were able to see, because of Signal R, someone modifying the Kanban board somewhere else, and it showed up instantly in their Teams chat, which is incredible.
Yeah, it's one of the, we implemented sort of live updates in our Kanban board last spring, I think it was, mm-hmm. when that went live. And if you've never seen that, it's really fun. But you know, when the board starts moving while you're just watching it, it can be a little creepy, but it's actually pretty cool.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we have another question coming in. Any plans to add custom backlogs on the Kanban board view?
Plans to add custom backlogs on the Kanban board view. Board for task work items or show task and story backlogs on the same board. So I think the question here is around sort of some of the parity between our Kanban board and our task board, maybe.
Maybe even multiple of them.
Yeah, or multiple flexibility. I think let me explain what you do have today. Today, we have the ability on VSTS now to add custom backlog levels. So that's kind of coming out right now. Which each of those custom backlog levels, you get a Kanban board that goes with that level.
Okay.
So you get that already today. We're also going to be investing in making sure that our task board, so the task board is not quite a Kanban board. It's a board to really manage the burn down of work for a sprint.
Yep.
That starts to have all the richness in terms of the customizable lanes as the Kanban board as well. So that's definitely on our backlog and something that we're going to do.
All right, perfect. Can Kanban boards be by team as well? Like, because I know you can take inside of team services, I could have several different teams underneath my team project. Can each of those teams get a Kanban board?
Yeah, so every team gets a Kanban board. That's the way to think about it. And for whatever level that you need in the product. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
And because you can link things together, you've got sort of rich traceability as well. And I'll probably like, one of the things that's coming that people have been asking for a long time, and we're getting ready to announce. We're not announcing it yet, but you'll see it real soon, is some really nice boards that show cross-team and cross-project views of data as it relates to your schedule. So we're calling that our delivery plan.
Okay.
And you know, in the next few months, you're going to start seeing us talk about that a lot more.
All right, perfect. I actually want to, something popped in my head about Application Insights again, is I did a lot of Docker yesterday. In my demo, it was all about containers. Mm-hmm. And I know that I can use Application Insights inside of my containers as well. And if I'm not mistaken, I can even have Application Insights on the host that is hosting my containers, so I can look at density and things like that. Is that?
Yeah, so we have an agent, basically a status monitoring agent, that can collect some of the counters, performance aspects of the VMs or the host that's there.
So. Okay, perfect. Yeah, because I wanted to make sure people understand that as you start to move towards containers, Application Insights still plays a critical role to make sure that you're delivering value in the containerized DevOps pipeline as well. So the last one here is I am waiting for custom search alerts and analytic queries. I think that one's for you.
Actually, I'm waiting for that too. Actually, I'm not waiting because I can use it today internally. The reason is that we actually have limited internal preview going on, which actually a lot, this has been asked a lot by a lot of customers. Okay. We definitely see a demand for that. It's not the question of if we'll have plans for it, it's just a question of when we are ready to go. So I think you should definitely see plans in the next few weeks as we go more and more kind of broadening our preview, but this definitely is there.
Okay. Yeah, I'd say there's no plan for it. It's there. We're just it's coming. It's on its
absolutely.
Way, right?
It's on the delivery plan.
All right. One more question is there support for conditional release steps such as execute if a previous step passed or failed, or based on a variable value? Yes and no. You can actually determine if certain stages start or stop and do certain things in your task based on a variable, because you can actually pass variables from one task to another. Now, those would probably be best used if you're doing like a PowerShell task, where you can actually interrogate that value and then decide if something should or should not happen. The tasks themselves would have to be architected to actually have a variable that says, I'm going to go watch this variable, and depending on its value, do I do or do not do something. Today, most of our tasks do not support that. But we've heard that a lot, right? So definitely know that you've been heard, and we know a lot of people want to do this. I always, as a DevOps guy, start to feel a little uncomfortable, like a smell, if you're trying to do if-lock logic inside of your deployment, because your deployment pipeline should be the same every single time. And I don't know. We'll probably allow you to do that. I'm not sure I'd be a big fan of doing that. I'd like you to re-architect or rethink why in the world do I sometimes want to do something and not sometimes want to do something in my deployment. Just something about that feels a little weird.
I agree with you.
You
know, I strongly believe on kind of like immutability based on the inputs that you get. So if you imagine I'm giving this pipeline a set of inputs, it should always come up with the same set of outputs at the end. Once you start actually mutating objects inside the pipeline and giving you different results, it gets really, really, really complicated very, very fast.
Right, so get away from you.
Yeah. So mutability within, you know, make sure that, okay, your set of inputs can change. But once you actually put that within, make sure that you don't start mutating them and things like that. And, you know, if and not logics or things like that, you could get into trouble on that end. So if you keep that frame of mind, you're going to be able to have, you know, reproducibility and a bunch of other things on it as well.
So. Yeah, and I always tell customers too, when you're building a DevOps pipeline, when you're going from dev to QA and QA to prod, the steps that you take should be exactly the same in one environment to the next, because the last thing that you want to do is try something for the very first time in your production pipeline, but you didn't do in dev and you didn't do in QA, because the only time you're going to know if that works or does not work is when it screws up in production, right? You should have tested that 3 and 4 times earlier in your other pipelines to make sure that. So if logic starts to feel like you're going to get a scenario where it did it this way because if was true, and then all of a sudden in production it's false and it doesn't work and you don't know why. So unfortunately, we are out of time. I hope you guys got a lot of value out of that. I want to thank all of my guests for coming today and talking about DevOps with us. Guys, take care.